and welcome to Just Plain Wrong, the podcast where three Mennonite librarians discuss depictions of Amish, Mennonites, and other plain groups in popular culture. I'm Erin, and I will be moderating this episode, and with me are Tilly and Abby, my co-hosts. This episode, we will be discussing The Half-Stitched Amish Quilting Club by Wanda Brunstetter. This book has been turned into a musical, which we did consider going to see, but we were too frugal to do it, so we opted for the book. And I think we're all very grateful we made that decision after reading the book. Also, we wanted to put this at the top of the show because we know people are often skipping towards the end when they hit the outro. But just a quick reminder that we do have merch available and a website that we launched at the start of this season. So if you're interested in having some Just Plain Wrong merchandise, and you can pretty much order whatever you're interested in, you can go to our website, plainwrongpod.com, and click the merch button. And I think we're hoping to maybe have some new designs up. Eventually, we'll let you know when that happens. All right, so our opener question. This book is about quilting and clubs. So feel free to talk about either of those things. Do you have quilting experience, or what sort of clubs have you been in?
I guess I've been in some book clubs and some high school clubs, never with great involvement. Quilting, though, is something that I've been interested in from a pretty early age. My mom and my grandmothers have both made quilts, and I've always sort of been interested and aware of different patterns and styles and quilt shows and that sort of thing. I didn't actually get into making quilts until college and didn't do a very great job because I just went for things gung-ho without really knowing some of the craft. These days, I would say my quilting, as in my actual stitching, is fine. My piecework, like my sewing, is kind of erratic. I've made some baby quilts, done some English paper piecing. I enjoy it. I'm not fast. I've been working on the same baby quilt for over 2 years now. The baby has now been born. Celebrated her first birthday.
Did you learn to quilt from like a Mennonite relative, or how did you learn to quilt?
Basic sewing stuff I learned from my mom. Quilting, as in the stitchwork, I learned in college by going to a Wednesday evening college Mennonite church group that met and did quilting and comforter knotting.
So similarly, I have family experience. Well, my maternal grandmother was into knotting comforters, and I have a comforter that she made me. My paternal grandmother did quilt. Those didn't really, I think my mom has probably made a quilt at some point, potentially, but it wasn't something I learned necessarily from her. Sewing wise, my mom growing up made a lot of clothes for me and my brothers, but I think probably more so for me. And including some, I was a child of the 80s, and she did make a, and I'm sure they were very trendy at the moment, but she did make me some vests. Some floral vests. Ooh. That I eventually decided were not in my own taste. And I actually, at one point in my own sewing journey, we had bought fabric to make a vest, but I decided I didn't actually want a vest. So I took it was like this magenta color for the inside and this like floral magenta thing for the other, for it was going to be, you know, two-sided vest. And I instead made them into, I improvised and made myself a pair of pajama pants with one leg being magenta and one leg being floral print. And I loved those. And it kind of marked the beginning of like my attempts at my own sewing as opposed to having my mom sew for me. But she still was a great help to me. And we actually ended up sewing both my junior and senior year banquet dresses. So not quilting, but something that was definitely bonding for us.
And I think clothes sewing is the hardest kind there is, really.
Yeah. And it was the first one, the pajama pair I made, not with a pattern, but just by taking my favorite pair of jeans and then just like putting the fabric on top of it and cutting it out. They were pajama pants is definitely probably the nicest thing you could say about them in terms of what they looked like.
Well, that's interesting. I feel like my quilting experience is zero, and my sewing experience begins and ends with like seventh and eighth grade home ec class, where I made, I believe, a stuffed monkey and attempted to make a hoodie in each year. Neither went well. So I was going to talk about clubs because I have been in those.
Do it, extroverted Erin. Share about your clubs.
You know, it's funny. Tilly's like, I don't think I've ever been in a club other than like a book club. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I don't even ever quilt it, but I have a long list of clubs. Yeah. And I guess it depends if a sports team is a club, then I have even more. And I think I would call a sports team a club. So maybe in terms of like highlighting a couple, I did play golf in high school and college. And the only reason I ever played golf is because at IMS, Iowa Mennonite School, my freshman year, they needed more women to play. So they like literally put a sign up sheet on a bulletin board. And my friend Mary signed me up as a joke. And I was like, oh, you know what? That sounds kind of fun. So that is how I ended up playing golf. I had never played before. And then in college, I was in a number of clubs, but I was in one, I think three of my 4 years, maybe all four, I don't remember, but it was called Peace Club. And I believe that stood for something. Like it was an acronym. I have no idea what the acronym was. And my favorite memory from Peace Club is that my senior year, we made these amazing shirts that were camouflage color. And they said, Peace Club is the bomb. And they were very fun. And I'm very sad that at some point I got rid of mine. So, yeah. Yay, clubs. All right. So moving into our book summary. And again, we read the Half-Stitched Amish Quilting Club by Wanda Brunstetter. So this is book one in a series. Emma Yoder is a recently widowed Amish woman living in the Goshen area who loves her late husband, Ivan, her family, and quilting. To earn some extra money, she decides to offer quilting lessons to people in the community. Her ads posted around town generate interest from a wide array of people who meet each Saturday and eventually form the Half-Stitched Quilting Club. The group includes some common stereotypes: Stuart and Pam, a married couple that hates each other; Paul, a Latino man who is a widowed single father and loves tamales and Jesus; Star, a 20-something aspiring songwriter who has tattoos and loves the color black; Ruby Lee, an African-American preacher's wife; and Jan Sweet, a softie who rides a motorcycle and who is on probation for a DUI. The group slowly learns to know each other during these Saturday quilting sessions, while also presumably learning some things about quilting. It was unclear. Each person or couple's problems is conveniently resolved by the end of the 6-week quilting series and this book. Stuart and Pam decide they will stay married despite an overwhelming amount of evidence that they should not do so. Paul reconciles with his sister-in-law who blames him for his wife's passing. Ruby Lee overcomes challenges to her faith, and Star discovers that Jan is her long-lost father. Yes. Emma herself learns that it is okay to be open to another relationship after losing her beloved Ivan, and ends the book starting a relationship with fellow widow Lamar. So that's our book summary. And on the one hand, part of the reason we chose this book is you're like, oh, this is a bigger cast of characters than usual. And it's kind of nice to have some characters that aren't Mennonite or Amish and a handful that are non-white. But on the other hand, I think we were all maybe a little disappointed in how those characters were portrayed. So let's start by each picking a character and talking about what bothered us. So Abby, we'll start with you.
So first of all, I was thinking about this, and so the two characters I wanted to talk about were Paul and Ruby Lee. So Paul is the Latino man and Ruby Lee is African-American woman. And so one thing that right away stuck out to me, at no point does she point out that any of the characters other than Paul and Ruby Lee are white. They are the default. They do not have a race. They do not have an ethnicity at all. It is just worth pointing out the people who are not white. And to be fair, I don't want to pick on this book in particular for that, because I think you would see that as a widespread issue in a lot of different books. And also, I do want to credit, I mean, Wanda Brunstetter is a white woman, and she is writing about characters who are a little bit outside of her familiarity. And I think it's really easy in that situation to want to only have, it's can be harder maybe to feel like you want to portray a complex character. And I think that was my biggest issue with Paul and Ruby Lee, is because by making them kind of like, they didn't have any flaws. Like even their situations were basically waiting for people in their lives to come to Jesus and to have a moment or to kind of fix themselves. Paul and Ruby Lee both had no, they had no flaws. They had no real issues. They were just, yeah, basically responding to other characters or waiting. And unlike, I mean, there were other characters there who were therefore more complex because they had both flaws and strengths. And so I think that was a real disservice in the sense that instead of, you know, maybe out of some concern about writing about, oh, I'm writing about a person of color as a white person, therefore I have to make them perfect. It ends up doing a disservice. So, you know, they end up feeling kind of flat and honestly a little bit boring because they weren't, there was not much there at all. And so that was kind of my biggest complaint about it. And as also as in our texting thread, as Aaron pointed out, Paul, who just happened to be, you know, a Latino man, was also pretty much the, like several different times mentioned how much he liked enchiladas and tamales. And it was just like, oh, really? Okay. And it wasn't like the other characters were talking about their favorite foods. It was just, it ended up feeling both very flat and stilted in that portrayal, which was a little disappointing for me.
Yeah, it very much placed the two of them in this category of like, your job is to suffer quietly and trust that God will take care of things. It didn't make them particularly proactive characters. And especially, I feel like Ruby Lee ought to have. Like, I felt like she really wanted her husband to leave the ministry. Like, it seemed like he was unhelpful. And instead, she just sort of did the evangelical wifely duty thing where her job was to support her husband at all costs and to do the unpaid labor of a pastor's wife and to not question anything. And I wanted better for her.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
The character I'm going to talk about is Star, whose first name is actually Beatrice, but she is calling herself Star because she doesn't like the name Beatrice and she likes to write music, and she's a bit more goth in her expression, sort of alternate, lots of like slinking around in hoodies, works as a waitress or waiter, I guess I should say, server. And it, you know, has a nose ring. And throughout the book, I should specify, my problem is a lot less with her than it is with literally everyone around her. Star's character suffers from being young and very much the like paint everybody with one brush kind of person. She's got a chip on her shoulder because her mom belittles her and doesn't tell her the truth about important things like who her father is. And her stepdad and her other mother's other boyfriends have been, if not explicitly abusive, just like really not kind and unsupportive. And so she's got a reason to be a disaffected youth who wants to pour her passion into, you know, her music. And that's not like exactly the kind of character I map myself onto, but I got really angry on her behalf when I saw that everyone else was just like, oh, this time she finally put her hood down for the quilting lesson and I could see her beautiful smile. Or it's like, it would be better if she would smile more. Like, maybe if she found Jesus, you know, this burden would be lifted from her. And, you know, everyone was very sincere about these thoughts. They're like, they could all identify that Star had this undercurrent of like intelligence and drive and spunk. But all of them were just like, if you change like two things, if you change the way you look and present yourself, and if you find Jesus, all of these other problems that have followed you your whole life will go away and we'll be able to like you more easily. So that made me angry.
Like, it was striking how many times Star was described as beautiful, but hiding behind her hood for some reason. Just I think every single other character said something along those lines about her. It's just like,
which was particularly funny from Emma, who was wearing a covering that hides her head. Her hair. Like you can see her face. Okay. You can hear her talk. The way she presents herself, like maybe beauty isn't what she owes the world.
Yeah. Mm. And I'm going to briefly talk about Pam and Stuart, our married couple. But before I even talk about them, let's preface this with, like, we don't often see married couples in our books because we read mostly romance. So we're getting either like young, like late teens, early 20s people who are like just dating, or we're getting like widows dating. So we rarely encounter a married couple in anything. And so I was sort of interested to see how this would be portrayed. And it was really distressing because they hated each other and they were both just stereotyped. Like Pam was a nag. She was a perfectionist. She like would overreact to things. She was also very into her role as wife and mother. Like when they have a kid that gets sick, she's the one who has to stay home and she forgets to make Stuart breakfast that day. And so he actually goes to the quilting club without breakfast because he doesn't know how to make his own breakfast. So that'll be my segue into Stuart, who is, I guess, what you would call a stereotypical man's man who wants his wife to go fishing and camping with him, even though she has no interest in doing so. Again, can't even make his own breakfast. And it's just, it was just really, the characters were frustrating, but I was really more frustrated, I think, in terms of how they were depicted as a couple, which is that they didn't have anything they liked to do together. They didn't seem to really like each other that much. And I'm just really sick of that in all media, not just this book, just in all media. Like, just give us some married couples that like each other. Mm-hmm. Like, it just really irritates me as someone who likes to spend time with my husband and thinks that more of that should be present in. I don't know. I don't know what else to say about that. I think we'll all have more to say about those two characters and their relationship, but it wasn't good. Yeah.
One thing I just want to add to that, that I think really frustrated me too, was, so in the end, of course, they get back together, which we will talk about probably more. But one thing that really bothered me about that is the way that it wasn't just bickering. They had clear, like, disgust for each other. Mm-hmm. And that is a really toxic thing. I'm not saying that you can have disgust for someone else and not, you know, I'm sure you could get there and maybe eventually move back to a place that you could be in relationship with them. But that's like a pretty big issue. That's not something you're just going to like have a couple good cries about and move on. Like,
yeah,
that's a really a deep issue. So I was felt frustrated that they could have that level of antagonism and literal disgust for each other. And yet somehow.
Yeah. Give us married couples that actually like each other. And then when the married couple, legitimately, you're depicting them with such issues that like the reader thinks that they like hate each other and have disgust for each other, maybe show us a healthy model for exiting a relationship. Like the way they resolved their relationship was, it just made no sense. Like they had been in counseling for what sounds like several months. And yet somehow the Amish woman simply asking them what they used to love about each other and to remind them of their precious children was all it took to fix all of the issues in their marriage. Oh, sigh. Many more rants to come, people. You're just getting started. So we're actually, because this book was a little vague on details, and I think because there were more interesting things to talk about, we're kind of lumping together accuracies and inaccuracies into one question. And I know Tilly has some things to say about quilting.
To be fair, the quilting segments are also a bit more vague, but I sort of feel like they're also inaccurate. There are these moments where you're like, okay, they're referencing you know, traditional quilt patterns, double wedding ring, ocean waves, lone star, tumbling blocks. Like, these are real patterns that, you know, I could visualize in my head right away. And, you know, when it turns out that Lamar is this secret quilt designer, not a quilter, he doesn't craft the quilt, he just designs the quilts. I guess because he's still a man, I don't know. Yeah, but the way that the class was set up was weird. It was like, it seemed like Emma would have these people in and she would give them the history of quilts and Amish quilts specifically. And then she like sent them home to do all of their measuring and cutting and stuff alone. And I'm like, no, that's where like most of your problems start. If you haven't washed your fabric and ironed your fabric and precisely measured your fabric and you don't know how to assemble these things, like that's where actually most of your time goes. They're just sitting in front of a sewing machine, which for, I guess they did like for 3 sessions in a row, takes a lot less time. So it didn't, the lessons didn't really feel authentic. And I didn't really believe that Lamar would be knowledgeable enough about quilting to teach a lesson, even though his wife ran a quilt shop. In part because he was like, I design these quilts and my you know, now dead wife would quilt them. And I was like, the designing and the crafting are actually really kind of separate processes. And designing can be pretty, you know, turning a design into a reality can be pretty hard, depending on what design elements you have. So I didn't love that. Like, I know that she was trying to make Lamar this, like, sweet widowed man who, you know, was like trying to cook and had some unexpected like abilities and was just really considerate. And I appreciated most of that. But I also didn't appreciate how everyone was like, oh, Lamar, your designs are so wonderful. Isn't it great that you can quilt? I was like, yeah, the man does the thing that the woman's been doing her whole life, only he does it less. And you spend pages praising him for it. Like, be excited, but like not a single person was ever like, wow, Emma, look at your skill and craft. Thank you for teaching me this class. Like, but everyone praised Lamar. So definitely my view on his abilities is tinged with my anger at the way that he's praised for them. So that's the quilting accuracies. I think Abby and Aaron are going to talk kind of about the other accuracies and inaccuracies.
Yeah, similarly, there wasn't a huge amount to go on. I will say some accuracies that I appreciated were that Emma was clearly surrounded by family. She lived right next to her daughter. Her daughter had a large family. There was like grandkids running in and out, and there was a lot of interaction, and that felt like very realistic. One thing there that I definitely felt was like the evangelical or this non-Amish perspective peeking in was, so they made it really clear that, so was it Ivan or Ivar?
Ivan.
So when Ivan died, Emma has, you know, needs additional financial support and her family has been helping her. And now, to be fair, maybe this is how Amish people, you know, feel, because they also live in a capitalistic society, but Emma really doesn't like taking money from her family. And this is part of the whole rationale why she has this club, because she wants to make more money from her quilting. And I was just like, this is also the like mutual aid is very fundamental part of the Amish, the way the community takes care of each other. And I can understand wanting to like continue to contribute, but the idea that Emma as a widow would somehow feel like she's not supposed to be helped by her family felt odd to me. So that was a minor thing. And I understand like the whole reason was, you know, she needed some motivation to invite all these people into her house. And then I did want to say it was really fun to read something that was set locally. And I will say overall, I was impressed by how much she got right. Like mentioning the pumpkin vine and like some of the general, like the time it took to get from Shipshawana to Goshen. And like, she did have a fair amount right. A couple things that I found a bit annoying. One was actually, I thought this was really interesting, jumping back to the characters. So Paul, who is a teacher and Latino, is from Elkhart. And Ruby Lee, who is a preacher's wife and African-American, is from Goshen. And chances are, if you are from this area, you would flip those two. Goshen for a number of different reasons, including the fact that it was at one point and for, well, it was a sundown town, and in Elkhart has a much higher African-American population and Goshen has a much higher Latino population. She also describes Goshen as the Northeastern Indiana. And North Central Indiana. So those are some geographical quibbles.
I also laughed. I think it was Star and her mother were talking about going to a movie and her mother referred to it, let's go see a movie at the Linway Cinema 14. Someone calls it the Linway Cinema 14. Yeah, I don't honestly have much to add. I did another local thing that I picked up on is that she has Jan Sweet, the motorcyclist on probation for a DUI. He resides in Shipshawana. And I mean, that could mean any number of things, but Shipshawana is literally a dry town. Those still exist. Like, you cannot actually buy any alcohol in the town of Shipshawana. So I don't know where he was that he was getting booze and driving. I put in our notes that he must have been meeting up with friends in Goshen and driving home or something. But just a fun little fact. It'd be kind of hard to get a DUI in Shipshawana if you don't ever leave town. And then another little thing. This isn't necessarily inaccurate, but I just kept like shaking my head. So Pam wants to join the quilting club because she wants to make an Amish quilt and how great her life will be when she can make an Amish quilt. And just like, Pam, honey, you're not Amish. Like, the quilt you make is not an Amish quilt. I'm sorry, no matter how much you want it to be. Yeah. And so that wasn't necessarily inaccurate. I did find it rather funny. All right. Mm-hmm. Anything else we missed on that?
I mean, I had sort of a quibble with something that was technically accurate, but didn't work. It was very clearly done for purposes of conveying things to the audience, not for setting an effective narrative. And that was the fact that anytime Emma would use something that would normally take electricity, she would specify, this is a battery-powered sewing machine. This is a propane-powered refrigerator. And so it was always clarified so the audience would know, you know, like, people in this community can use technology under these conditions. It was like, this is true. And it would be, I guess it would be better than the alternative, which is just saying refrigerator, English sewing refrigerator machine.
Oh, I was thinking of the opposite of like the English cars and the English refrigerators.
But it was just so pervasive that every time like there was an adaptation, and I just like, if that's your daily life, like, I don't go to my refrigerator and think, ah, my electricity powered refrigerator, my electric sewing machine. Like, it's effective in what it's telling the audience, but it's not very effective. Like storycraft, if that makes sense.
All right. So back to the depressing parts of this book. It's been a long time, I think, since we've read a book with just such blatant evangelical themes. Lots and lots of Bible verses interjected, lots of characters talking about finding Jesus or other people's need to find Jesus. Multiple characters literally having like parts of their lives set in a church, divorce being clearly bad, gender roles. I don't really have a question, but I know we all want to talk about various pieces of this. So we'll just each take a turn, I guess. So Tilly will start with you and whatever evangelical theme you would like to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Well, for starters, you know, there's the whole evangelical tone of characters who are not necessarily evangelical, like Paul, who is Catholic, and Emma, who is Amish. And they're all about the, like, the witnessing and the, like, living your life as Jesus would have you do it, which I think is true of both of those denominations. I also just, it's very pointed with them, where it's very much like, let me name drop Jesus, see if it takes. Like, yeah. And there's even one point in the book where Emma's like, you know, most Amish, you know, didn't evangelize, but Emma thought it was very important to be upfront about her faith or something. I was like, okay, I guess I can understand that in this context, but it it just still just didn't feel right. I had deeply hard to articulate how much I did not like Stuart and Pam and how much I pitied them and how much I wanted better for them, and also how much I didn't really respect either of them. Like, it's a very tangled up emotion for me. The first thing is that I just wanted to be like, okay, you deserve better. And no, having common interests is not the indicator, sole indicator of a good marriage, but you have literally no common interests except for the general health of your kids. And even that is pretty limited. Yeah, and then Stuart would say stuff like, oh, he was drawn to Pam at first because of her smarts and her beauty. And like, we don't know why Pam was drawn to Stuart. Like, there's never any reason. Like, it's just like, he's a default man. He deserves a beautiful, smart woman. And then they have kids and they've been married for a decade. And that's what where the turning point in their relationship comes, is when Emma is like, well, you've invested a lot of time in your kids. You've created beautiful kids together. Now think of your children. And they're both like, oh yeah, we have put a lot of work into raising our children and having children. And I'm like, and that's sort of how they frame it. Like, it's work. Like, this is the sunk cost fallacy. You need to know that, like, just because you've spent time on something doesn't mean that you have to keep spending time on something. Like, if you're investing in something and you've given lots of money to it, to, you know, the hole in the ground, and the hole in the ground is only getting deeper, you can stop giving it your money. You know, you can stop giving a marriage your time, and you can still give your kids your time. Like, and I would think that the kids would ultimately be happier for it. Mm-hmm. Not that divorce is a pleasant experience, but just no. If something isn't working, you are allowed to quit it.
Yeah. And this book was so anti-divorce. Like, it was striking to me because we had all of these characters, this whole cast of characters, and we have not one, not two, but three widows. We have Lamar, Emma, and Paul are all widowed. And then we have the married couple who eventually reconciles and stays together. The only characters that are close to having a divorce are Jan and Star's mom, whose name I can't remember, Bunny. And even they never get married. Like, she runs off and is therefore demonized as a bad person. But even in that situation, the author doesn't want to touch divorce as like a thing that maybe they got married and then she ran off and had to get divorced. No.
And you actually, there's another widow, because so I also remember Star's mother. She actually was married to Wes, the abusive boyfriend.
Oh, that's right. And he died. He died.
He walked out under the road and got hit by a car.
Even in an abusive relationship, she couldn't write in a divorce.
They did not divorce. So you actually had four widows?
Four widowed people? Wow.
You know, I feel like there's an option here. Like, you can write a book about how hard divorce is, mm-hmm, and about how heart-wrenching it is to come to the conclusion that you need a divorce. And you can make it so it's not praising divorce. At the same time, you know, you can still say that marriage is good and marriage is sacred. You can also just say sometimes people get married young and sometimes people don't know what they're looking for and sometimes things don't work out. Like, it's possible to say all of these things at once. It's not a binary.
Yeah, because I guess in my mind, if God cares about our personal relationships, and it's in a way where God wants us to be happy in those relationships.
And safe.
And safe, and, mm-hmm, yes.
Capable of bringing up children in a healthy environment. Like,
well, that segues us into my general beef with the theology presented in this book. I don't even know if I need to extrapolate. I can just read some lines of text. One was, these are literal lines from the text. One, quote, bad things happen for a reason. And two, quote, God chooses what we go through, but we choose how we go through it. And I guess I agree with the second part of that statement, but definitely not the first. Like, all of this is very much like the deterministic, everything happens for a reason. All of the bad things that happen in your life, like, God's putting you through those. So just buckle down and get through it. And I guess, like I was just saying with the divorce thing, I have a hard time with theology that asserts that God would want bad things to happen to us. To me, that's not what religion and faith should be about. And mm-hmm. Ooh, I'm like mad. Yeah. Like the bad things happen for a reason with Stuart after he basically gets his finger sliced off, which was a very minor injury to be considered that bad.
But it's enough for Pam to freak out and to say the words, I love you.
Yes. Which is why it happened for a reason, because apparently he needed to almost lose a finger for them to say they love each other. Totally normal relationship.
Only dynamics. He needed prompting for it. She said it, and then she said, and then he sort of like nodded, like, yes, I do too. And she was like, will you say it? And he's like, well, fine, I'll say I love you. And I'm like, and we're back to like really not hitting the lowest bar that has been laid for you. Like,
I mean, definitely agree with those. I think I was trying to think of what particularly I wanted to discuss in this one. And I think, like, there's definitely a quote specifically where Emma, where they kind of recognize that Emma's evangelical thing is a little bit different than regular, than how the other Amish would be around her. And this is one thing also thinking about how the Amish approach church. Like, in a lot of districts, church is a every other Sunday thing. And it's you know, it'd be pretty different than like an evangelical Christian church service. And despite all of that, like, towards the end, of course, because as part of the ending, all of the characters end up, if they weren't already regular attenders at church, they started to like sporadically visit church. And what really bothers me about that is that somehow, like, so there's this line and it's right towards the end where, and it's referencing, you know, Pam and Stuart and their, you know, revitalized marriage and all that. And they were, you know, so according to Pam, since Stuart had purchased an RV, they were spending more time together as a family, which in turn had helped their marriage. That makes sense. Spending time together helps your marriage. Okay, I do buy that. They too had gone to church several times this past year, which Emma felt certain had also strengthened their marriage. And that is not how church works. Like, yes, church can be a wonderful, enriching, strengthening practice in people's lives. But I would say for the vast majority of the time, that's when it's done regularly and in community. Somehow, like, sprinkling in like 2 to 3, 4, 5 church visits a year is not like taking your vitamins or something. Like, it's not going to just like somehow spontaneously make you, you know, strengthen your marriage by walking through the church doors 4 times a year. That's not how marriage works. And that's not how church works.
So shifting a little bit, we mentioned this in the summary, and I think we've alluded to it a couple more times, but the big sort of reveal of this book is that in the random assortment of people who signed up for this quilting club, 2 of them happen to be related. Jan, turns out, is Star's father. And I feel like I was power skimming this book, and that is my excuse for not catching that this was coming, because once it happened, I was like, oh, duh, I should have seen that coming. So I am curious if you all found it surprised and what your thoughts are. I will just start by saying I was kind of meh on the reveal, but I did find it incredibly gross how the author made the choice to have both Star and Jan at various points throughout the book express sort of romantic interest in dating the other. Like, yeah, like being like when Jan's talking to his friend about like the quilting club, he's like, well, there is this one young girl, Star. She seems pretty interesting, but I'm probably too old for her. And then Star basically says the same thing. And it's like, you can be interested in someone as a person and it not be like romantic. Like, couldn't you have just been like, yeah, there's this young girl, Star. She seems pretty interesting. I'd like to talk to her more. It doesn't have to be like, I want to date her and then make that person then her father. Like, that's gross. Anyway, so with that, what did you think? Tilly, we'll start with you.
I was pleased that I got the twist a little bit before the half mark.
Would you have gotten it if I hadn't texted and said there's a big twist?
I think so.
Okay.
mainly because there's this moment where they're standing around in class and Jan is like, you know, all women don't fulfill the promises and they run out, and Star is like, well, men aren't any better, you know. And then she has this internal dialogue about how her mom is this flighty woman too, And I'm like, oh, they've both been burned by a horrible woman who dared to like have other priorities. And then I was like, it's the same. And as far as the, like, I don't know. I try really hard to like look at the bits where they're looking at each other as like prospective partners and to like try and make them less gross. I was like, well, you know, from like a story crafting perspective, like from the outside, you know, maybe this is the author trying to throw people off the scent. You know, maybe this was deliberately added to try and make this more of a surprise. And from an in-universe perspective, maybe it's Jan is sort of identifying common qualities between Star and her mother in the type of woman that he respects. And maybe Star is just reacting to the first, like, you know, kind of alternative man she's met who's also kind. And maybe that's why they're doing this. And this is just like them being desperate for like relationships of any kind. But, you know, I think Aaron, what you said is right, that the grossest part about it isn't that they considered each other romantically. It's that they had to consider each other romantically. Mm-hmm. It's the problem is that like they're of opposite genders. So in, I guess, this evangelical mindset, I think it's a lot about the author, is that the role of a man and the role of a woman are two. Find a romantic and sexual relationship and to have it with the other gender. And then when you are married, your first role as a woman, your highest calling, is now as a wife and a mother. You know, so what it does is just like it just reduces all relationships to romantic ones. Like it means that you can't ever look at people of the opposite gender or another gender as anyone other than a potential interest. You know, it doesn't matter their age, doesn't matter if they're your type or anything. Like, that's so limiting. And it means you can only be friends with women or you can only be friends with men. And it just, what does that say about intergenerational friendships and friendships between genders? And it's just so sad.
How about you, Abby? Do you see it coming?
Oh no, I was solidly in the Aaron camp. Did not see it coming up until the sentence came in out of the book. I thought at some point, because Aaron was ahead of us, she did text about a surprise ending, and I just thought someone was gonna die in a buggy accident. Like that's or that like shocking there was gonna be like someone else was gonna get widowed, like Stuart would die.
Or someone would have like a come to Jesus moment.
That did happen. Yeah.
Yeah. No, so it was very much a surprise to me. And I agree. I think as opposed to having this like artificially, like you were saying, Talia, this whole idea, like in order to show that there's this connection between them, it has to be romantic. Just having something be like, oh, it's not just Emma who's a good listener, you know, because Star bonds with Emma. Like she could have been like talking with Jan and discovering that he also was a good listener and that they could, and then, you know, have that impact how the reveal happened. I mean, that's usual. It's much more unusual for Aaron to miss it than me too. So I'm continuing with my tried and true tradition of missing the obvious until it is literally stated.
All right. Well, before we move into reviews, we're going to do some favorite quotes. And I thought that this would be a good book to potentially read some bits out of. So if you could both pull out your devices and turn to chapter 16. So this book's dialogue was just really stilted and weird. And I thought this was a good example. So Abby, why don't you be Pam? Okay. And Tilly, you will be Pam's friend, Heather. This is after they have a workout. And I will read like the narrator part. For
a little bit. Like this. Okay. Okay. That was quite a workout we had today, wasn't it?
Pam asked her friend, Heather, after they'd finished their aerobics class for the day. Heather nodded and pushed a loose strand of jet black hair behind her right ear.
It got my heart pumping pretty good. That's for sure.
Do you have time to sit at the juice bar and visit a few minutes?
Pam asked.
I really need to talk.
Sure, no problem. Ron's working late at the office like he usually does on Friday, so I don't have to be home for a couple of hours.
They both found seats at the bar and ordered cranberry juice over ice.
What's up?
Heather asked.
Even after that workout we just had, you look kind of stressed.
Pam drew in a quick breath and blew it out with a puff of air that lifted a piece of hair that had stuck to her sweaty forehead.
I've been stressed for several weeks, and it's only gotten worse.
What's wrong? Are the kids getting on your nerves?
It's not the kids, it's Stuart. Despite the fact that we have been seeing a counselor for the last month, things aren't getting any better between us.
But you're taking that quilting class together, right?
Well, we were, but Stuart hated it so much he said he didn't want to go again.
Then maybe you shouldn't force the issue.
We could probably pause
Gag.
There.
That's what all of the dialogue is like. That's what all of the prose is like. That's what all of the not dialogue is like, too. Like, it's just the craft of this book is not good.
It was bad.
The English major in me just wants to take a pen to it.
Well, I have one. This is one that I texted to you all. It literally, like, I read it, I laughed, I highlighted it, I laughed again, and then I sent it to you all. So lack of attention could be why your dog's getting out of his pen, Star said. I visited a website once when I was doing a research paper for my 12th grade English. It's wow. Anyways, that just line just stuck out to me like a very sore thumb.
My sticks out like a sore thumb line was when Ruby Lee was talking about her husband and some things about her husband. She said his motto was, when you're done with something, put it away. I'm like, that's not a motto. Like, cleanliness is next to godliness. That's a motto. Like, when you're done with something, put it away is just a thing that you do or don't do.
There were so many things. And the one that I actively, like, there were some that were funny. Like, as usual, the insertion of words from Pennsylvania Dutch was just arbitrary and weird. Especially when Emma has shingles and she's feeling sick and her granddaughter comes up to her and is like, nobody has time to be grank, gross mommy. Because we can't just say sick. We have to say grank. And then we get grank, gross mommy. And I'm just like, you looked at that phrase and you didn't, like, did you not notice how hilarious that word is? Like, that's not gonna be like a cute moment or a sobering moment. It's just gonna be a weird sentence. Yeah, and there's this moment at the very end. You knew it was coming because they're getting all these reports about how everyone's going to church. And then Star says, is talking with the other women, and she says, I think I'd like to know more about this relationship that you three have with the Lord. And it's an inevitable statement, but the phrasing is so weird. Like, if I didn't believe in Jesus and was vehement about how I didn't believe in Jesus or in God, which Star is in the beginning, I wouldn't start my attempt. I'd be like, I'm interested to know what you believe in. Or like, I think I'd like to go to church with you one day. Like, A, I wouldn't switch to using the Lord right away. And I wouldn't switch to using relationship either. Like, I'd just be like, tell me about why you believe in Jesus. Or like, why do you go to church? Or like, you could ask, I could just, especially like a 21-year-old going up to someone being like, tell me about the relationship you three have with the Lord. I actually highlighted it, and I was angry enough on my Kindle when I was typing that instead of saying gag me with a spoon, I said gag me if a spoon, because I was typing so quickly and angrily.
So let's rate this lovely piece of literature. I think we'll go with wall hangings. Just keep it simple. They were making these wall hangings. I believe they all finished them despite each one having a week where they had some sort of personal crisis and had to run out of the lesson halfway through. They all seemed to finish the wall hanging.
And the fact that Pam did like at least half the work on Stuart's.
That's silly. Why don't you rate first?
Yeah, this is one book that doesn't improve with our discussion. I did not like the way it was crafted. I was not impressed with the effectiveness of the storytelling or the dialogue or the metaphors that were used. Like quilt metaphors are so easy, you know, like pick up a children's book about quilt and you'll get a beautiful metaphor about life and the universe and interconnected threads. You know, it's an overdone metaphor and I usually love it. I'm a sucker for like a good, like tapestry of life and like the threads of fate are being measured and cut. Like, I love that. It is not utilized here to good effect. It is referenced several times, very awkwardly in sentences that I will not bother to read out loud. And, you know, the characters that could have been the most interesting and had the most, like, intriguing perspective were the ones who were forced to sit around and wait. And then everyone was sort of reduced to their romantic relationships or the relationships with their kids. And, you know, if it was maybe a smaller cast of characters, I could abide by that. But it's a deliberately large cast so that it can be diverse. And she still chose to make all of these people focused on those things. And I didn't like the theology. I didn't like the message. And I do really like quilting. And this book did a disservice to quilting. And I'm angry. So this is going to get a half star.
Ooh, half lowest rating.
Yeah, I feel like, wow. I must have done something at a lower rating than that, maybe. But
no, I think 0.5 is the lowest we're allowed to give.
I expected better from Wanda Brunstetter. I figured that because she was an earlier writer and mm-hmm. because she's been like very consistently published and because she got to the point in her career where she was like, I want an ensemble cast, I assumed she could handle it. Mm-hmm. I assumed that this would be an enjoyable read, and it was not.
Yeah. I feel pretty similarly. I think especially I was looking forward to this because we had some things that we've talked about wanting. Like, first of all, we had an older protagonist, which I think was great to see portrayed because, you know, older people can fall in love too. It's not all young whippersnappers just out of Rumspringa. And we had a diverse cast, with that ended up, I feel like, really not being handled particularly well. This book dragged for me. I had to force myself. It was not a long book. And I had to force myself multiple times to be like, keep reading the book, go back to reading the book, finish the book, Addie. And a lot of that is I felt like the writing was stilted. I think, given the prolific nature of the author, I was expecting better. And so I was kind of disappointed on all fronts. So I think I might have to join the 0.5. I can't figure out a reason to go up to 1, honestly. I mean, yeah, this just wasn't, it failed on all the things I was looking forward to about it.
Yeah, no, I'm right there. Like, I feel like it was a really, really good premise. Like, it mm-hmm. could have been such a good book. Like, yeah, let's bring in all of these interesting people into an Amish home and see what happens. Like, it's a pretty good premise. And then it just was executed so poorly, like Tilly said, on every level, prose, character development, even the quilting, not that I would have known that. and it just was bad all around. And then the theology pieces and the gender stuff, like it just added, like, so not only was it disappointing, you left like angry, or mm-hmm. I left a little angry, or like not with a good taste in my mouth with the way some things were handled. So I too am going to give this 0.5, making this somehow rated worse, I believe, than Amish Country Treasure. But I think part of that is like Amish Country Treasure was written by an author we think is a bot. This was written by a real woman who we had better hopes for.
mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is our lowest collective rating at 0.17.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode, conversation, many rants on Half Stitched Quilt Club. Quilting Club? I can't even get the title right. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this book, quilts, your favorite clubs, as well as your recommendations, corrections, and other musings. Next week, we will be discussing the Hallmark movie, Follow Your Heart. I already mentioned this at the beginning of the episode, but you can go to our website, plainwrongpod.com, to learn more about the podcast and also find the link to purchase merch. We appreciate when people leave reviews and subscribe, as that is how other people learn this podcast exists. Thanks for listening.